Here on Stolen Lives, we discuss brutal and heartbreaking crimes against children. Themes may include child murder, torture, and sexual, domestic and child abuse. I do try my best to remain respectful for the babies in these stories and leave out unnecessary details that honestly, none of us need to know to understand the frustration of why and how this ever happened. However, if you find any of these themes triggering, this podcast may not be for you. Listener discretion is advised. This week's story is a listener suggestion. Thank you to Julia for bringing Brendan's story to my attention. No, not the Julia in the story. Complete coincidence. Unfortunately, there wasn't justice in this story we are talking about today, with Brendan's killer eligible for release 8.5 years after taking his son's life. Thankfully, the first parole application was declined, but DJ will see freedom while he's still in his 20s, able to live a full and happy life, while Brendan's never really got the chance to start. October 2015, Haddon Hills, New Jersey. A 3-year-old boy has an overnight visitation with his father, a man later described as loving and gentle by the boy's mother. The following morning, the father called 911, panicked that his son was missing and not in the home. The boy found shortly after, less than a mile away next to a creek bed. What police would uncover was a string of text messages from the father's girlfriend, speaking of her desire for him not to have a child. This is Brendan's story.
We kind of like talked about like what else could have happened to him. And he had told me that maybe his spirits told him to walk down to the woods, which is completely odd and unexplainable. It's not logical.
Brendan Link Criato was born June 1st, 2012 in Haddon Hills, New Jersey, to teenage parents, Samantha DiNotto and David Criato. The couple had been high school sweethearts, meeting while they were both students at Haddon Township High School, with Samantha becoming pregnant soon after graduation, the couple doing their best to make their relationship work. However, David, or DJ as he was known by to family and friends, DJ would have an affair, which led to the couple breaking up in 2014 when Brendan was 2 years old. After this, they remained on good terms. Even though they weren't great together, they were determined to be the best parents they could be to Brendan separately, dedicated to co-parenting their son. Brendan lived with Samantha, but visited with DJ every other weekend. Both parents proudly showing off their son and all his milestones on social media. One such visitation was in October 2015, when our story takes place. October 12, 2015, shortly before 9 p.m, Brendan's paternal grandfather dropped him off at DJ's house, so they could spend a few days together. Brendan was always excited to see his dad. Brendan, dressed in his red pajamas, gave his grandfather a kiss and waved goodbye. October 13, 2015, 6 a.m, David Criato called 911. He told the dispatcher he woke to discover his 3-year-old son missing. During this phone call, DJ seemed genuinely upset, saying the last time he saw Brendan was when he put him to bed the night before. The police arriving on the scene 7 minutes later.
911, where's your emergency?
I just woke up from my 3-year-old's missing.
Okay, what's your address, sir?
Hold on, he's out. He's out, is he in there? No, he's missing.
All right, and what's your
In Haddon Township.
What is it?
Haddon Township.
Haddon Township. 3-year-old boy or girl?
3-year-old boy. His name is Brendan.
Spell his name for me.
Brendan.
And last name?
Criato, Creato.
Okay, and what'd you lay see him wearing?
He was wearing red pajamas.
Okay, and you didn't hear anything or see anything or nothing like that?
No, I just woke up and he wasn't in my apartment. I don't know if he wandered out or what happened. I don't know where he is. The door was locked. I guess he unlocked it and left.
All right, and your address is?
Yes.
Okay, you already had the police on the way, sir. What is your name?
My name is DJ.
DJ, your latest name?
Creato.
Spell for me.
Creato.
All right, sir, do me a favor. Just hold on. I already had the police on the way. Don't hang up.
All right, thank you.
I want to see if the police dispatcher wants to speak to you, okay?
All right. All right, sir.
All right. All right, stay on the phone.
All right, the police are on their way. This house door was locked and the bottom door was locked. You guys are locked, the doors just left. I don't know what happened.
DJ would tell police the prior evening there was nothing out of routine. That he read Brendan 3 bedtime stories just like he did every night. That he tried to contact his 17-year-old girlfriend who was in New York attending school. DJ said he went to bed at 10 p.m. and when he woke the next morning, Brendan was gone.
I did nothing right now, okay?
So much time has passed. So much time has passed.
Absolutely. I told you before, I know you don't see a lot of it and we're all standing, but we have resources in the air. We have everybody working on this thing. I know. Listen, we are working diligently, okay? I'm waiting on the word, and believe me, I would love to be out there myself.
He questioned me. My story doesn't add up, and it says there's no big problem. I'm not tripping out of you. It's making me feel like they found a decision. They're just not telling me yet.
Listen. Let's relax. Can I get you a drink of water? You should take a deep breath.
DJ went on to theorize that possibly the toddler had opened the front door to his second floor apartment and wandered off into the night. Now, anyone with children or has been around children knows this is ridiculous. Small children don't leave the safety of their parents in the middle of the night. Most small children are absolutely terrified of the dark, and Brendan was no exception. His mother, Samantha, later telling police there was no way Brendan would voluntarily walk out of the apartment on his own because he was scared of the dark. The Child Abduction and Response Team, a Field Communication Unit, and the Delaware River Port Authority Canine Unit were all brought in to help with the extensive search for the missing child. The dogs being given Brendan's red velvet Mickey Mouse slipper to track his scent. Unfortunately, 3 hours later, the search would end with the worst possible outcome. We are just going to take a quick break now for a word from one of our sponsors. The search and rescue dogs led their handler down a few streets to a wooded area known as Cooper River Park. And at the bottom of the hill there was a creek. This is about a half a mile from DJ's apartment. Next to the creek, the search and rescue team found the body of 3-year-old Brendan Creato. He was dressed in his red pajamas and neon green socks. He was found lying on his stomach over a rock, with his pajama pants and diaper pulled down around his ankles. What stood out to police, though, was the condition of Brendan's socks. Despite DJ's theory that the toddler had maybe walked out of the apartment himself, Brendan's socks were completely clean of dirt and debris, meaning it would have been quite improbable for him to have walked to where he would be found. Most likely, he would have had to have been carried and placed there by someone. Now, the news Brendan was found deceased really affected the police officers on the case, who had been hopeful this story would have a quick and happy resolution. They genuinely thought he'd be found not far from home, possibly with a kind neighbour, scared and confused. And then they could reunite the 3-year-old with his dad, and it would be that happy feel-good story that you see at the end of a news broadcast. The cheeky little boy who went on a nighttime adventure. But instead of bringing Brendan home to DJ safe and sound, police officers had to instead inform DJ that his son had been found dead. And understandably, DJ did not take this well. He completely lost it. He jumped and he screamed. He broke down in tears saying he'd lost his best friend.
We found his son. He's deceased.
Oh, God, no.
He was found on the shore.
No! You can't tell me this.
I'm sorry, sir.
They're my friend. I love them so much. What happened?
Well, that's what we're trying to find out right now, okay?
Where was he?
He was found along the shoreline.
The shoreline of what?
River.
Oh, God. Was he in your alley?
What's that?
Did he drown?
Well, we don't know that this time. So we're trying to find out.
Oh my god!
I'm so sorry.
What do I do? What do I do? Where's my body?
Samantha released a statement, quote, "We are heartbroken at the loss of our beautiful boy, Brendan, along with the Crianto family. We have lost a son and grandson. We are grieving and tremendously saddened," unquote. Samantha also thanks people for helping in the search for Brendan. Now, unfortunately, the start of the investigation into what happened to Brendan was very ordinarily handled. The CCTV footage was checked from a surveillance camera about 75 yards away from where the little boy was found. But there really wasn't anything that shed answers as to what happened to Brendan and how he ended up in the creek. And then before the crime scene could be processed at all, Brendan had been moved and touched by several police officers untrained in forensics, so any evidence there had been compromised right from the start, setting the investigation back and making it that much harder to get to that crucial key forensic proof of who may have murdered this child. It was only after Brendan had been moved and taken away by the medical examiner would there be any real processing of the crime scene. Ultimately, Brendan's remains would have 3 autopsies before there was a conclusion as to his cause of death. The first 2 autopsies resulted in inconclusive determinations, but the 3rd autopsy found a bite mark inside of Brendan's cheek and pinprick hemorrhaging inside of his eyes, all of which could indicate strangulation. But this alone isn't decisive. After a lot of reviewing and re-reviewing of the 3 autopsy reports, December 2015, it was announced cause of death was determined to be homicidal violence of undetermined etiology, meaning that the medical examiner was sure Brendan didn't die of an accidental death or from natural causes. The medical examiner determined the boy had been murdered. Now, as we see in all missing and murdered children cases, investigators start close to home, because statistically, those who are the parents or primary caregivers, they are the most likely to be responsible for the neglect or abuse of a child causing death. So being Brendan was in his father's care at the time of his disappearance and death. So being Brendan was in his father's care at the time, DJ was brought in for questioning, willingly handing over his cell phone for forensic examination. DJ had been forthcoming he was seeing a woman and was speaking with her on the night in question, DJ having met 17-year-old Julia Skensky 4 months earlier on the Tinder dating app. He told investigators they had spent a few days together, but on the morning of his visitation with Brendan, he had dropped Julia off at the train station. As he mentioned previously, that night he spoke to Julia at around 8:15 for about 4 minutes. A shorter conversation than normal because Julia had an exam the following day and she wanted to get an early night, but DJ would later tell investigators that he thought she was lying about this. Still, half an hour after this, DJ would text his girlfriend that he loved her and that he thought she was beautiful. Julia never replied. After Brendan went to sleep, and despite Julia telling DJ that she wanted to get some sleep, he still tried to call her 3 more times, between 9:54 and 10:07 p.m. Again, I don't find this strange because Julia told him she was getting an early night. DJ would tell investigators he then went to bed himself shortly after this. However, forensics never lie, and in these cases our phones tend to be our greatest undoing. And investigators would discover on DJ's phone, even though according to DJ he was sleeping, his social media activity would have him on Julia's Snapchat around 1:30 in the morning. When questioned about it, DJ admitted he would log into his girlfriend's social media accounts because basically he didn't trust her fidelity. That Julia had become close to a male classmate, and they were regularly spending time alone and having these long conversations. Julia would tell him he had nothing to worry about, and nothing was going on, but DJ had his doubts. It soon became clear DJ was obsessed with Julia. He was very jealous of the time she was spending with classmates, and it seemed as if Julia almost played into that paranoia. By the end of the investigation, police went through more than 9,000 text messages between Julia and DJ, most of these being recovered deleted messages. October 6, 2015, a week before Brendan died, DJ told Julia that he wanted her to be with him and Brendan that coming weekend. Julia replying, "We don't always get what we want," and that she didn't want him to even have a kid, let alone spend her weekend with the boy. And this is what seemed to be the sticking point in their relationship, the fact that DJ was a dad. You see, on the surface, DJ and Julia's relationship seemed great, but the truth was, they fought a lot. and a lot of these arguments seem to be about Brendan. Julia did not want to spend time with Brendan. She didn't want to hear about him. As far as she was concerned, she would rather if the child didn't exist. She spoke of such hatred for this sweet little boy she actually didn't even know. In text messages, she would accuse DJ of choosing to spend time with Brendan over her, which, I mean, as he should. With the deleted messages, his desire to keep his teenage girlfriend happy and the lies investigators caught DJ out on, they knew there was more he was hiding from them. His responses seemed almost rehearsed. When he was asked questions during his police interviews, DJ would volunteer information that didn't seem relevant. Another lie investigators caught DJ out on was that he claimed he had never been to the spot where Brendan was found. But again, he was caught out by his phone, because he had pictures stored on his phone of the exact location, and these were taken only days before Brendan was found murdered. In fact, this location was one of DJ's favourite places. Brendan's mother, Samantha, would later testify that before Brendan was found, when he was still missing, DJ suggested a spirit might have drawn their child to a wooded area. And interestingly enough, that's exactly where the little boy would be found, in a wooded area, an area DJ was fond of and visited often. Now, because of Julia's dislike of Brendan, and the fact we don't know her whereabouts on the night Brendan went missing and was murdered, police obviously wanted to talk to her some more about what she knew, if anything, about what happened here. But Julia admitted to being at DJ's apartment the morning before, and that he dropped her off at the train station early, at 5:45 to get back to school in New York. And surveillance footage from the train station supported this. DJ's pickup truck can be seen dropping Julia off at 6:48 a.m. and she walks away. Investigators also obtaining a swipe log from Julia's college dorm at Pace University. She was definitely not anywhere near DJ's apartment that night or the following morning. Police being able to rule Julia out as a suspect. So yes, while she wasn't responsible for what happened to Brendan, she is still a horrible person for her reactions towards this boy she didn't even know. Didn't even want to give him a chance of knowing. January 11, 2016. DJ Crianto was arrested, charged with first-degree homicide and second-degree child endangerment, being held on a bond of $750,000. Investigators working with the theory that DJ most likely killed his son in a fit of rage over insecurities and fear of losing his relationship. Unfortunately, the prosecution had a long road ahead of them if they were to get a guilty verdict. The case was lacking any real physical evidence, making the case against DJ a circumstantial one. The trial began April 20, 2017. The prosecution describing DJ as a jealous and obsessive boyfriend, that he killed Brendan in an effort to save his relationship with Julia, that Julia did not want to be around Brendan, and she was already moving on with a male classmate. The prosecution theorised DJ suffocated his son with a pillow. He then went to the creek, leaving Brendan in the water, the same creek he'd taken a picture at 2 days earlier. Brendan's mother, Samantha, testified that DJ had repeatedly told her the same story about putting their son to bed and then waking up to find he wasn't there. She spoke about him telling her about spirits, something he had spoken about to her for years, that he said he was getting a weird energy in his apartment. But despite these odd statements, because DJ was a soft-spoken and fairly gentle man, that he never even raised his voice to their son, let alone physically harmed him. He was always a gentle and loving father in her eyes. DJ's mother Lisa would be next to testify, and she was the person who dropped her grandson off for the visitation. She'd be the last person to see the three-year-old alive, outside of DJ, that is. She testified that the front door of the apartment was broken. Even though she didn't have a key, she was able to use a screwdriver to get into the apartment that night. Now, at the time of the missing person investigation, the likelihood of a stranger abduction was never considered, because police claimed there was no evidence of a forced entry. But this wasn't exactly correct, because the jurors were shown pictures of damage to the door that DJ would later state it was ridiculously easy to break into his apartment. So much so, DJ would state he barely ever carried around the door keys, because he could simply pop the lock without them. DJ also said that his bedroom was on the other end of the apartment, so it was possible he slept through the hypothetical abduction. That he possibly didn't hear Brendan opening the door to a stranger, or a stranger breaking into the apartment and taking his son. The defence arguing that DJ was never anything but cooperative with the investigation into finding Brendan. He answered all of their questions, never asked for a lawyer, and consented to searches of his cell phone, apartment and vehicle, as well as providing a DNA sample. But the fact the investigation was flawed from the beginning, the authorities targeted DJ to close the case. That there was a cigarette butt found close to where Brendan was found deceased, and the DNA on the cigarette butt did not match DJ, or anyone on the National DNA database. Now, Julia did all she could to get out of testifying against her former boyfriend, repeatedly stating she wanted to invoke her right against self-incrimination. However, the judge eventually ruled that she must testify in front of the jury. Julia would go on to say at the time of Brendan's murder, DJ was jealous, paranoid, and struggling in almost every aspect of his life. Julia admitted that she wasn't happy sharing DJ with his son, mainly because it affected him being a part of her busy social life. The medical examiner's office was of course really criticised due to all the mistakes they made immediately after Brendan was found and in the aftermath. The medical examiner on scene, Dr. Fagan, was called out in front of the entire courtroom under cross-examination when it was discovered the doctor accidentally attached someone else's autopsy report to the back of Brendan's.
And after looking at this and your grand jury testimony, is there anything about it that was incorrect or that you corrected the day before the jury?
I think there is a comma missing from my opinion.
Okay. How about the last page of this, sir?
That's Ron, my investigator's notes, yes.
Your investigator's notes, would you read that to us?
It says, decedent was found under... Oh, wait, I have the wrong...
You what?
That's the wrong one.
You what?
It's the wrong page that doesn't belong to it. It's the wrong person. I was given the wrong one by myself.
So this is... It's the wrong name. It's a different person. It's a different address. It's a different date, different time of day.
Yeah, that's wrong. Mm-hmm. I was putting it on the stand.
Decedent was found unresponsive lying on the floor outside his bedroom. Dime Wong was called, pronounced...
I'm going to object at this point. The doctor's indicated the report. It's not wrong.
Detail-oriented, right, doctor?
Yes.
Detail-oriented. You read those six pages before you came in today, before you told this jury about how Brendan Criado died, right?
Yes.
Detail-oriented. You got the wrong report from your investigator.
DJ's father, David Criado Sr., also testified. He said that all the unanswered questions in the case left him feeling hollow. Quote, I'm never going to be okay. I don't know if my child is a killer or not. I can say 90% he didn't do it, but not 100% he didn't do it, because of the way they investigated. Unquote. May 31st, 2017, the trial ended in a deadlock. Based on circumstantial evidence, no DNA, no physical evidence, no eyewitnesses. Add on to that, there were three inconclusive autopsies. The state just couldn't prove DJ murdered Brendan beyond a reasonable doubt. And a mistrial was declared. The jury couldn't come to a unanimous decision. A new trial was set for September 11th, 2017. And the family were told if the second trial ended the same way, then all the charges would be dropped. Just weeks before the start of the second trial, August 23rd, David Criado accepted a plea agreement where he pled guilty to aggravated manslaughter, DJ only admitting to depriving his son of oxygen. So instead of a life imprisonment sentence that was looming, DJ received only 10 years for the aggravated manslaughter conviction. He would be eligible for parole after just 8.5 years. Meaning he would be eligible for parole September 2024, when DJ was still only 31 years old. DJ's family are still advocating for him and his innocence, saying that he was just a pawn in a botched investigation and would never have done anything to hurt his beloved son, and that he only accepted a plea deal to save everyone from reliving the grief of Brendan's death again with a second trial. We are just going to take a quick break now for a word from one of our sponsors. Sadly, Brendan didn't get the justice he deserved. 10 years for killing your child is an absolute joke. DJ claimed Brendan was his best friend, but then he chose his girlfriend over his own son. Julia was almost as bad. Yes, she didn't kill Brendan directly, but what she said about this sweet little boy was disgusting. She could have just ended the relationship if she wasn't going to accept Brendan. He deserved to grow up and live a full life, not to be discarded like garbage in a creek. The community came together for a candlelight vigil after Brendan was found, October 13, 2015, Haddon Township, New Jersey. More than 100 people gathered, holding candles and praying in the memory of the boy who lost his life. Mourners spoke about Brendan and how excited he was to be the Hulk for Halloween. October 23rd, 2015. 3-year-old Brendan Criato's funeral was held at the Blake Doyle Funeral Home in Collingswood, with Brendan later being buried in the cemetery next to the Holy Saviour Church in Westmont. The funeral and burial being paid for entirely by donations from the public. And then in December 2016, a bench in Cooper River Park was dedicated to Brendan, not far from the spot where the little boy was found 14 months earlier. The plaque reading, "Captain Hook, you are my favourite storybook. Neverland, I love you so. You are now my home sweet home." Brendan would later be described by those who knew and loved him as a genuinely happy little boy who was always smiling, and he loved everyone around him. Brendan loved music by the Beatles, in particular Yellow Submarine and Strawberry Fields. He was obsessed with pirates and superheroes. He'd recently developed a love for the Hulk and Iron Man. Quite often, Brendan would wear the costumes of both the superheroes at the same time. Brendan also loved Lego, animals, and monster trucks. If you have your own thoughts and theories on the story we discussed today, or any stories we talk about here on Stolen Lives, please search Stolen Lives Podcast on Facebook, like the page so you don't miss an episode, and join the Stolen Lives discussion group to talk about your thoughts and theories. You can also talk to us on Instagram, Stolen Lives Podcast. If you like what you heard today, we would appreciate it if you share this episode on your social media of choice, and subscribe and leave a positive review on your podcast app. Today's episode was researched and written by me, Ali. Hosting and production was also by me, Ali. Music is by Mayu.